I'm Dr. Julie Linderman, and this is the MommyMD podcast, where Dr. Karen McClard and I discuss melatonin and sleep issues.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Dr. McClard. How are you?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
Just fabulous.
Good. Good to hear. So we have a couple good topics today
that
you have selected that I'm excited to go through.
Well, I think, did one of your patients actually ask you about this or say it's something that they wanted us to address?
Yes. So I did have a patient recently who texted me a question about melatonin. Mm. So for those of you that don't know, because you only have newborns, and you haven't reached this point yet, but melatonin is a hormone.
Yes.
That is available over the counter without a prescription that can help with sleep.
Right.
And so it won't be long, if you haven't heard of it yet, that you are trying to get your child to sleep.
Absolutely. It's,
I would say that of the two big things that people want us to do, besides get the cough to go away, it is make their children sleep.
It's so true.
And make their children eat.
I think it probably, the discussion around sleep occupies maybe 50% of my well check discussions.
Especially
starting
between
from the
ages.
Get-go.
Well, from the get-go for sure. Right. But then, you know, maybe they have some acceptance that they can't do much about it the first few months.
Right. That's
but
for
then,
sure.
But then, you know, maybe starting 4 to 6 months
Absolutely.
Through the toddler years for sure.
Right.
Sleep is this kind of beast that
is
either works or it doesn't. And there's, everybody wants a simple answer and you have to work.
The truth is even when it does work, it's easily disrupted.
Yes.
Right? So like
and
vacation,
for example,
illness.
Last weekend, time change.
Yes. Oh,
such an evil part of society.
It is.
It serves no purpose. I mean,
I'm
willing to take a firm stance on that.
I know.
It's dark at 5:30. I'm stressed that I'm still at work.
I know.
And there's no food in my house. I don't. There's just a lot of concern.
I'm trying to embrace the darkness, that time of day.
Embrace
that Well, there was somebody, I'm trying to think of who it was, and I'm probably not going to be able to pull this context, but they went to something where it was like celebrating the time change as like a part of fall and winter, and recognizing that there's beauty in that. In that early
such
darkening.
Such an optimistic point of view.
I thought it was really cool really because I generally don't like it and it does depress me. But I'm trying to think that, you know, it's a time to be kind of cozy and light a fire. And
yes, definitely.
Read, hopefully,
and
a little
I
bit
love
more.
And lightness in the morning.
I
mean,
do too.
In fact,
makes it easier to get
on
up.
Last Monday, Lucy was paranoid we were late for school because it was light, because we'd been used to leaving the house when it was pitch black, and so
that's,
you know,
a good change.
That was good, but my kids are 10 and 15, so it's a lot easier for me
it
to
is
adjust.
For the little ones, I think
the
they're definitely
ones,
impacted.
They're waking up at 5 in the morning, and when 6 in the morning was already too early, now they're waking up at 5 in the morning.
And so on that note, I think it's really important that to think about incremental change, right? So like it's one thing. So if they, obviously they are up now an hour earlier than they were before. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you let them work through it on their own for 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next week, it's another 15 minutes. And so you go from that 5 o'clock when it used to be 6 to 5:15.
Yes.
And then 5:30 and then 5:45 and then 6. It's always the trying to make it go exactly back to where it was abruptly that is just doesn't work.
Which is what we have to do as adults.
Yes.
We have no choice.
Right.
So that, I mean, we can't decide
Exactly.
Don't want to go to bed at 8 o'clock, even though we want to, we still have stuff to do.
Right, right.
Sometimes we don't do it that we get in bed at 8 o'clock, and that's okay.
That's right. Okay, so tell me, what would you tell? So a parent first comes to you and says that they, you know, they feel like their kids just can't fall asleep at night. It takes 45 minutes. And let's say, I mean, I don't know, we deal with this obviously at a bunch of different ages. So we can talk about like adolescence maybe in a second. But say this is a toddler.
Right.
Or a, you know, somewhere in the range of 2 to 6 years of age.
So one of the first things I always ask is, tell me about the child's naps. Because a lot of times, especially if the kid is in daycare, they are napping too long during the day. And so For a child that takes a 2 to 3 hour nap at daycare, they don't want to go to bed at 7 o'clock. They don't need to.
Exactly.
Because there's a certain amount of sleep that we all need to function. And if you take a 3 hour chunk of that during the day, you don't need it at night.
And I think this is interesting just to, you know, add to that. So, you know, there's pretty good data that after about 3 years of age, a nap actually works against you. In this sense that it can be disruptive to not just falling asleep like you're talking about.
What about when you're 41? Are naps good? I mean,
at that age, naps are
awesome. Okay,
good.
Just checking. I don't want to be doing anything harmful.
And maybe if it's like a, you know, a brief nap, like you're talking, and not doing like a 2 hour or something.
Right. No.
But a lot of daycares, you know, they want that time.
Well, sure. Who doesn't?
Understandably. Yeah. And so, you know, 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds and sometimes even 5-year-olds
are napping,
are still getting these naps, and then they're not, like you're saying,
at the detriment
to fall asleep
of the parents.
And I even think it I mean, there's some, I can't remember that it, I've read this on Up to Date, but where they talk about it actually interferes with not just sleep onset but even sleep depth.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's you can bank sleep, as we learned when we were residents.
Right.
And so if they are banking all this sleep during the daytime hours, then it's just less they need at night.
Exactly.
So in order to prevent bouncing around, which is pretty easy to do, let's talk about one specific. Yes. Well, and I feel like we do that because we have these circular conversations. So first of all, let's make sure the child is not napping, or at least if we can beg the daycare to limit it to only 1 hour.
Okay.
And so sometimes it's really hard to go against that because why are they going to wake your kid up after an hour these other kids are sleeping? So,
right.
But that is one of the very first things to address. Second thing is, do they have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep or both?
Right.
And so I think the falling asleep sometimes is pretty common in the kid that's napping or in the kid that is very high energy, or the kid hasn't seen the parents all day and, you know, you get kind of, I don't know, energetic in the evening.
Right.
So the basic things like, you know, calm down, let's not do a bunch of exciting jujitsu in the evening.
That's a throw out to you there.
That's right.
Sound engineer.
I'm just saying, I don't know if our producer practices jujitsu, but he looks like he might.
He does.
Does he?
Did you really not know that?
I'm very good at reading people.
Oh God, here goes our circular conversation.
I know. Okay, sorry. Let's go back. Okay, so people have heard of melatonin sometimes, and they ask me about melatonin, or I tell them there is something called melatonin.
Right.
That is over the counter that you can try. And it is a hormone that can help induce sleep. And it's naturally occurring in the body, but it doesn't always get produced in the same amount or in the same
because
time frame.
It's not go ahead. Sorry.
Well, no, that was basically the end of my sentence.
No.
Do you know why? Because I don't know that I did.
No.
Just because the body's weird.
Yes, the body is weird.
Yeah.
And so absolutely right. Everybody has different levels of secretion.
Right.
They produce different amounts. It varies by age.
Right.
Right. And then, and some of us are just, unfortunately, you know, have more available than others. It's
right.
Kind of like serotonin or,
dopamine.
Gosh,
right.
I mean, the things that we love and wish we had more of.
Right.
But melatonin definitely fits into that category.
Right.
What, you know, I think makes melatonin difficult as far as supplementing is that it's not something that is regulated, right?
By the FDA.
Right.
Yes. And this is something I learned almost 3 years ago, that since it's not regulated by the FDA, if you have 5 different brands with the same 1 milligram, you could be getting a wide variety of, if you have 5 brands with the same 1 milligram, you could be getting a wide variety of delivery to your body.
Yes.
And so used to Natrol was the brand that I was taught was the most consistent in terms of what you see is what you get.
Okay.
The problem with Natrol is they do have a quick dissolve, but they don't have a liquid. And I know that, of course, some kids obviously
quick dissolve, like an orally disintegrating tablet?
An orally disintegrating tablet.
Okay.
But some kids clearly can't swallow pills. And I know that there are some brands out there that are liquid or gummies.
Yeah.
And so to try to administer
right
a pill, it's hard.
And you know, I don't know about that specific one. I think when parents ask me, is there a brand that I recommend?
Mm-hmm.
I think what I would do is try to find a company that you think, if you can find, not that you think, but if you can find information on, like, you know, a vitamin company like Metagenics or something like that, where they produce not just melatonin, but they have multiple different vitamins, minerals, supplements, and have a good reputation. That, so, that I think is at least
critical.
Helpful. Yeah.
So Natrol, definitely consistent. And then the new one that has been recommended to me by one friend who is a sleep nurse practitioner at Children's, she recommends one called REM Fresh, R-E-M Fresh. And that is another brand that has been clinically tested to consistently deliver the milligram of melatonin that's on the bottle.
Which is great because it's, you know, we, one thing we see with anything that's not FDA regulated is that the dose, even if it says 1 milligram, can vary widely.
Yes.
From one tab to the next.
Yes. It's kind of mind blowing, actually.
It is.
Because, you know, I feel like we have a lot of patients that want to use natural supplements. And I also try to explain that to them, that if you buy something over the counter that is an herb or a hormone like this is, you have to really do some research.
On the brand. Absolutely.
So the two brands that we recommend, and not that we are sponsored by them at all, are Natrol and REM Fresh.
Awesome. I actually have not been able to give people a brand, so it's nice to hear that.
Yes.
And this information coming from someone who works in the
sleep lab
at Children's.
She does the sleep disorder clinic at Children's.
So and that's actually coming from a great source.
Several years. Yes.
Awesome.
So then the other component to the delivery mechanism is there's a time release. So, and I have not been to the pharmacy to look at all the different REM Fresh formulations, but Natrol certainly has a time release version, which is better for kids that can't stay asleep.
Right.
So the, you know, fast onset, which would be most of them. And then the hope is that once they fall asleep, they stay asleep. But then there is a Natrol that is, it has a little clock on it and it's very subtle and it's hard to see, but that one is time release.
And so is it like a biphasic then? Will you get some benefit from on the front end for sleep initiation and then also have sleep maintenance?
You should.
Okay. I would think it would.
I don't know that I've ever seen if it's like, you know, for example, like a methylphenidate 50-50.
But it
in theory is giving you a steady dose all night long, but also enough to kind of initiate sleep. So
that would be ideal probably
dosing is hard because once again, there's no official recommendations other than from the experts who use it consistently on a regular basis. But I almost always exclusively say start out with 1 milligram, about 30 minutes before you fall asleep.
Right.
And then depending on the reaction that the child has, I mean, you can go up to 5 milligrams.
You can. And I do think it's an important point, though, that it never hurts to start small.
Right.
And then raise from there.
Right.
And then if you find that then you get to, say, 4 milligrams and that ends up being the therapeutic dose for your child, then over time, it may be something that you can slowly scale back down.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
Sometimes I think just breaking a bad habit.
Yes.
Makes a big, you know, if you can just do even melatonin in low dose or whatever for a week or two and then try to pull back, can make a huge difference because you've reestablished a new baseline, right? I mean, the goal is to affect the circadian rhythm.
Yes.
And whether or not that's something that as you pull the medication away or the hormone away, you're able to maintain, that's the question. But I mean, that's the goal.
Well, and just having that ability to fall asleep on your own without a I hate to say sleep crutch, but let's say that you have to rock your, it's similar to a baby that falls asleep in the mom's arms and then wakes up in the crib. You know, if your toddler is used to, you know, falling asleep in your bed and then they move them, you want to start these habits where when they go through, like you said, their natural circadian rhythm, they heavy sleep, light sleep. When they go through light sleep, they just get themselves back to sleep on their own.
Okay, so this is a really important point because, and I know that we both practice this way and have this discussion. So yes, melatonin has a really important place, which we can even elaborate on more, but sleep, overall sleep hygiene is critical, right? From the get-go.
And yes.
It's really hard as parents, which we can relate to try to set up schedules and good sleep habits, like, you know, taking a bath in the evenings with your, you know, toddler, and then maybe reading books for 20 minutes and avoiding all digital media or TV or yes. anything that's stimulating yes. at that time.
Jiu-jitsu.
But yes. that's critical, right? And then actually, on the flip side, in the morning, being exposed to, you know, bright light, mm-hmm. having kind of a regular wake time, even on the weekends, making that wake time relatively close to what it is on weekdays, so that you can help create
healthy habits. And I think that what we all want is, oh, well, this is what you do, and then it'll work. But the problem is, well, with something as simple as the time change, you can spend a month of consistently doing the same thing and then get in a really good, you're in a really good spot. And then your child gets sick
yeah.
or you take a trip
right.
or it's right. Christmas.
Right.
And then what you spent a month working so hard on is undone in a night.
Absolutely.
But then having the willpower to get back on that schedule and not budging and starting those. And I mean, to calm bad habits sounds judgy because we all do it. And it's,
I know.
I mean, when your kid is sick, they get in bed with you. Like that's because everyone needs some sleep.
Right.
But as long as you don't realize, or as long as you realize that
right.
this is not a thing that's going to stay for the next few years.
And maybe also you pick attainable goals, right? So like, because I'm the worst at this. I mean, you can ask the sound engineer.
Yes.
Like anybody, including a furry animal, can come and try to get in bed at 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, sure, because
sure.
I need to sleep, right? So, but the I have a lot of parents who will say things to me like, well, you know, my 3-year-old can fall asleep on their own, or 4-year-old can fall mm-hmm. asleep on their own, but without question, every night at 2 a.m., they mm-hmm. come in and want to get in bed. And you know, my question back, especially lately, has been, well, how do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Like, do you sleep well when they get in with
you? Well,
and that's the thing. Are they kicking you all night and nobody's sleeping?
A ninja. And you wake up and you're like, whoa, what's going on here? Who is that person? Because that has certainly happened to me with Lucy.
Absolutely. Yes.
In that, you know, and I love to go to bed early. Like, it's one of my, if I can get in bed at 8 and be like completely out by 9, it's a really good day.
Totally.
And which my kids don't go to bed that early because they're older.
Right.
And so it is not unusual for me to wake up and Lucy's has gotten in bed with me. So, but kind of like
you said.
And
I kind of love it. And so if I have a parent that loves it,
well,
and they're also, and they're eventually going to grow out of
that. Well, that's the thing. It's a limited amount of time that she's going to want to cuddle with me.
Right.
Because, you know, when my son is 15 now and I'm begging him to even have a meal with me.
Right.
And, but when he was, you know, 9, he would get in bed and watch TV with me. And I didn't stop that to the extent that some people have very big passion about.
And that's, you know, I think what works for you. But
right.
but my whole thing is that don't, you know, it's okay to say, tonight we're not going to accomplish falling asleep independently, staying in our own bed all night, and not coming out of the room until 7 a.m., mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Maybe it's like you pick one of those three.
To start
you set
with.
That goal initially, that mm-hmm. if we can just get sleep onset. I
right.
think sleep onset is so important because that's like the time that, you know, parents have together.
And, yes.
you know, one of the things that I still remember, you know, being so tired when our kids were little and, you know, one of the girls would want Kevin or I to lay down with them. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, I would always fall asleep first.
Well, sure.
I mean, within 5 minutes.
When you're a resident, if you get still for 5 minutes.
If you get still for 30 seconds,
yes.
you're going to fall asleep.
Yeah.
But, and then I would, you know, wake up at like 10 o'clock and be like, oh man, I mean, I missed my evening with Kevin,
right.
which that, you know, that's a bummer.
It's important.
But, you know, if they come in at 2, maybe that's okay,
yeah.
right? So for me, it was picking, you know, if we can try to work on this and just, you know, and it's gradual. So mm-hmm. initially, maybe you sleep, you lay down with them and you fall asleep. And then you go to, okay, I'm going to rub your back. I'm going to kind of set a timer for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But then after 5 minutes, I'm going to, you know, start my exit out of the room.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whatever. It's this that gradual step by step.
Yes.
And laying it out without a lot of verbiage. Right. So that's another thing, right?
Yeah.
It's easy to talk it to death with our kids because, you know, we feel like, well, if someone explains it thoroughly to us, then we're more likely to agree.
Why can't we be logical with a 2.5-year-old? Right. Why can't they understand the importance of, you know, sleep cycles being consistent?
Yes. Way better to not have a huge emotional diatribe and just to say, you know, a few very simple words, maybe a very easy, tangible reward or consequence, and
well,
that's
it. Well, do you know about the sleep all night in your own bed fairy?
No, tell
yes.
me.
Yes. So there is a sleep all night in your own bed fairy that okay. can be summoned. And if you sleep all night in your own bed, when you wake up in the morning, there could be something nice outside your door, but you have to sleep all night in your own bed.
I love that.
So I feel like we've pivoted into sleep, which is okay. It's just such a deep topic.
It is a deep topic, but I think it's important that we're talking about it.
Because Not just the melatonin.
Because
we can use melatonin as a tool to help with sleep onset.
Absolutely.
And perhaps, you know, maintaining sleep. But let's just keep going with this. I feel like we're on a roll and I have so many thoughts in my head regarding sleep that just keep spilling out. And you and I have not actually talked about this yet. So this will be a very spontaneous conversation about how we advise our parents on a particular topic. And so one thing that we touched on, falling asleep on your own, and then of course waking up in the middle of the night. And then some kids are good at that, but then consistently they wake up in the middle of the night and they won't stay in their bed.
Right.
Or you're trying to get them to stay in their room to fall asleep.
Right.
And you know, if it's going to take them an hour to fall asleep, and some kids it does, it takes them an hour to kind of consistently wind down. And if they're refusing to stay in their room, sometimes you have to lock them in their room. And I know that sounds kind of scary and mean, but I'm willing to put it out there because it is what I recommend. And so I better be willing to stay behind my words. So here's how I tell people to do it. I mean, you try clearly really hard to reason with them, but I mean, it's a 2-year-old.
Right.
They cannot,
right.
for the most part, be reasoned with. You can try bribes. I can't remember if I mentioned the sleep all night in your own bed fairy
you did.
Before. So,
yes.
you know, you try that
We've
approach.
Had a couple technical difficulties. So we're coming in a couple times here. So we're trying not to repeat ourselves.
Right.
But anyway.
And basically parenting, and I think I've said this before, is finding out what your child is motivated by. And so if it's
For sure.
not reward, then eventually you're going to have to use some sort of
consequence. Right.
And so making the door where you can't open it because you won't be safe in your room is what's going to happen if you continue to leave the room. And so it's definitely going to be a battle of willpower at
right.
some point. And you clearly tell them that you're not trying to be mean or scare them, but at some point there has to be a physical barrier or you're just not going to win, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to give you my 2 cents.
I love it.
So, okay. So one, I really recommend keeping kids, if you can, in the crib until like 3. Right? Now, some kids you can't because
right.
they've climbed out and now it's dangerous. And as soon as a kid is climbing out of their crib, then you have to switch to a bed, right?
right?
But that is your most contained space,
yes.
right? A safe, contained space. If they can't get out, that, you know, you just, you know, you can let them cry and figure it out. And at that age, at 2.5, they can have toys in their crib.
Sure.
They can have little, you know, glow worms or little books or whatever, right?
Do they
okay.
still make glow worms?
I don't know. I'm so dated, but I loved those glow worms. I don't know if they do or not, but
you know,
we're
going
to need to bring that back if they don't.
We
should. So that's the first thing. So for me, I mean, you know, I understand what you're saying, and I've had some patients I know, and even actually one of my partners who has had to go through that, where they locked their kids in the room.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's something that I would recommend.
Yeah,
and
I thought you might have a different take on it. This is maybe one of the only things.
I think I'm kind of a softy. I know, because you and I actually practice, I think, very similarly.
Right.
If a parent told me that they were at that point where mm-hmm. that was the only thing they felt like they could do, I would be supportive.
Right.
I mean, I don't think I would tell somebody that I thought that was going to be harmful to their child, because typically this is a kid that's, you know, around 3, maybe mm-hmm. 2.5 to 3, 3.5. And so I just would say, let's take this stepwise approach first, mm-hmm. right? And so, like you talked about, I think the sleep fairy is really cute. Stay in your bed fairy.
Sleep all night in yes, your own bed. It's kind of a complicated name.
It is, but it's a good one. Then I think, you know, having that, like a clock in the room, like that red clock, green clock
oh my
can
gosh.
Be helpful.
Well, and the okay to wake clock. Okay. Was great for Lucy.
Yes. I mean, I think those are that's a really smart kind of something that is not. So anything that you do as a parent that you're tied to makes it more emotional.
Yes.
So if it's an objective thing, so mm-hmm. if it is the glowworm, if it is the little thing that puts the, you know, waves on the ceiling, like the little turtle that plays music, you know, mm-hmm. those too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anything that is outside of you just demanding, I think, tends to be more effective.
Yes.
Right? So, and that goes, you know, in line with when we were talking about over-explaining or to your child, which is really hard not to do, but generally is ineffective. So I think what works 100%. The best is having a couple things and then having maybe like your pom-pom jar or your jewel jar or your dinosaur sticker chart or whatever, to where if you stay in your room, you get one pom-pom in the jar, you get one dinosaur sticker on the chart. And then once you have three, then you get to go do something special, like go get ice cream with mom, mm-hmm. right? But it's having this tangible reward and then the promise of a reward that's attainable.
Yes.
And then the consequence is you've lost one of those. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's your first consequence. Then the second consequence, then they come back out again, maybe that you lose your, you know, your favorite Woobie. What I wouldn't do is I wouldn't have the consequence be something like, okay, we're not going to go to the party tomorrow, or we're not going to go, you don't get any iPad time tomorrow.
Right.
Like things like that, I feel like they're so far away, and are you really going to do it? You know, I hear people do that all the time, mm-hmm. and I know it's hard because we all want to say like, oh, if you do that again, we're not going to go to the park.
Right.
But like you want to go to the park.
Sure.
And your kid kind of needs that time.
Yeah.
And so taking that away, I feel like punishes the parent almost as much as it punishes the kid, especially the iPad time, right?
Yes.
So, I mean,
it's
I don't.
A whole other topic, yes. which we are definitely going to approach, but sleep is.
Yes. Yeah. But I think, you know, I would use that as a last resort, I mm-hmm. guess, which is probably how you're using it anyway.
For sure. I don't say, okay, it's the kid's two. Time
now, to lock them in their
room.
Now,
fast forward till they're 15. For sure you lock them in their room at that point. Maybe throw some food under the door.
Right.
Get one of those, like, solitary confinement.
Bars on the window.
Bars on the window.
Yeah, okay.
You do everything possible. That's also another
topic. And I guess you just want to make sure, right, that there's no way that they can injure themselves if they're in there. So anything that...
And I mean, I do... To me, I have like kind of three big topics that I talk about with disciplining and parenting.
Yeah.
And one is you have to be consistent.
Yes.
You can't... You know, one night let them in bed with you and then expect that they will understand the next night is not okay.
Right.
Because if you're not consistent, then you're just setting yourself up for these frustrating moments.
Absolutely.
Two is you have to follow through with any sort of consequence that you say. For example, if you in the heat of the moment say we're not going to the park, and then they do something to deserve that, and then you go to the park anyway.
Right.
That isn't a very effective parenting
technique.
But so much of parenting at a lot of ages just comes down to having more willpower than your child.
Ah, so true.
And it is so hard when you know the only thing you have to do to fix the situation is give them what they want.
Right.
And they'll be quiet. Right. Because, I mean, that
is so true. It's so hard. It's so hard to be consistent and to have more willpower than a 3-year-old.
Yes.
It is so hard.
I say that, like, you're the parent and they need to understand that relationship. And yes,
for
you're
sure.
there for nurturing and support and, you know, all these wonderful things that we do, but you're also there to teach them critical life skills.
Right.
And I think it's a critical life skill to sleep all night in your own bed because if you wake up consistently and have to move where you are sleeping in order to get back to sleep, that's not good sleep hygiene.
It's true. It's true.
And so...
And being able to self-soothe, even from an early age.
Yes.
I mean, it is truly a skill. We're not necessarily equipped with that from the start.
No.
And even if we are, it's so easy for us to take away that natural instinct, you know, not even intending to.
Sure.
But then to get it back, I mean, you're right. It is a life skill.
It is. And so understanding that this is, and I, when we talk about, you know, sleep training at, you know, between 4 and 6 months, depending on the weight and the kind of the feeding schedule of the baby, what I tell people is, you know, this is one of your first true lessons in parenting, because your baby wants something but doesn't need it. And your baby wants you to soothe her back to sleep with, you know, cuddles or nursing her or rocking her. That's what she wants. But what she really needs is to learn how to get herself back to sleep on her own.
Absolutely.
And if she was crying in the middle of Target when she's age 3 because she wants, you know, an Xbox, I don't know. Is that something a 3-year-old would want? Probably not. But, we're being told it's, okay, so anyway, my point is, you're not going to feel guilty about not buying your 3-year-old an Xbox just because she wants an Xbox and she's crying.
Right.
The same, and now the same at 6 months, your baby's crying, but this is a skill she needs to learn. And it's the same at 3 years old or 2 years old. Right. You need to sleep all night in your own bed because this is what is best for a healthy brain and having a great day tomorrow.
It's true. It's so true. So I think to just to kind of, I want to get back to melatonin for a second. And I know we've been talking for about half an hour, but so with melatonin, right, we've talked a lot about a couple things. So one that, you know, if you can find these reputable brands that your, friend who's a nurse practitioner in the sleep clinic recommended the, tell me those one more time. It's the REM Fresh. Okay.
And Natrol.
And Natrol.
Okay. And then for Natrol, the time release is really kind of a good one.
Okay. So I think that's an important point to take away. And then the other thing is, you know, keeping the doses ideally small, right? So starting with like maybe 1 milligram. And then, you know, if you need to, you can go up to like 5 milligrams. And oftentimes, like if there's an adolescent, right, they're probably going to end up taking somewhere between like 2 and 4 milligrams. And then, you know, giving that dose about 30 minutes before sleep and, you know, hopefully using it for shorter periods of time versus longer periods of time. But I, you know, I did do some reading. We both have done reading about melatonin because we obviously get this question a lot from parents. Really, the data is very good that it's safe.
Yes.
So, and there's not a ton of data, and that's probably the only reason why there's ever a question mark. But it is something that your body secretes. It is a naturally occurring hormone. And so the goal with supplementation of melatonin is just to bring the level in your own body back to a more normal level, because for whatever reason, you're not secreting as much potentially as somebody else.
So, and one other thing that I don't think we mentioned, we talked about maybe staying it on 1 to 2 weeks and then slowly bumping it down. But let's say bumping it down doesn't work.
Right.
And so you're giving your child melatonin every night. And,
right.
And for, you know, several different reasons you feel guilty because you feel like this is something that has to happen and it's been months. And so I think the bottom line is don't feel guilty.
Right.
If it's something that your child needs, and every now and then you can try to back off. Now, if you try to back off, try it for a couple weeks.
Right.
Or, I mean, if your child, let's say your child's been on melatonin 9 months.
Right.
And you go down from 4 milligrams to 3 milligrams and it doesn't work for a couple nights, don't just be like, okay, it's not working.
Right. And if there's a way for you to hide that you're affecting the dose.
Yes.
That to the child.
Yes.
I think that's a good call.
For
even
sure.
With an adolescent, right?
Oh.
Because, I mean, so I've had parents say, well, she just keeps asking me for that like 1 milligram gummy.
Lucy called it melatonic.
Yeah.
She's like, Mom, I need a melatonic tonight.
And actually some, you know, I've heard that a lot, like a lot of kids will just ask for it here and there.
Yes.
And I mean, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
But I do think you could potentially give a gummy or a chocolate chew that has nothing in it.
Brilliant.
And that sometimes that placebo effect can be helpful. So, I mean, I think that's just something else to think about. But but it is really important that, and one other thing I just want to make sure that we mention, because I thought about this when we decided to talk about this today. There is some really good data, actually, on kids with autism spectrum disorders.
Yes.
ADHD.
Yes.
Learning differences, hyperactivity during the day that maybe isn't, you know, classic ADHD, whatever.
Did you say autism?
Yes.
Okay,
that melatonin is beneficial for those kids. There's actually good data.
And necessary.
And necessary. So that's another thing that if you have a child that is in, you know, falls into maybe one of those categories that, and you haven't tried that, it may actually prove beneficial.
Yes.
So.
And that was another thing my friend in the sleep lab told me that they, because I was asking her, you know, is it okay for me to tell my patients to stay on this long term? And she says, absolutely. We have lots of patients that stay on it long term. And so we have no reason to think that's a concerning thing.
Right. Like years. And actually, and the data that does exist, even though it's minimal, has not shown any adverse effects after years of treatment.
Right.
Even on your melatonin synthesis that occurs naturally. It's not down-regulating that. And I think that's important too.
Because we all produce different amounts. And that's why some people are better sleepers than others.
Right.
All right.
Okay, we're going to wrap it up, even though we could easily talk for like four more hours.
And I feel like we probably dropped a lot of stuff out there that has follow-up questions.
Yeah,
like,
I'm sure you're right.
And I feel like I'm maybe doing a disservice by just saying it's okay to lock your kids in the room without going. Because that,
you
I'm not suggesting
that.
A closet, clearly. No. Don't lock them in a closet.
No, the truth is their room is kind of a sanctuary. They've got all their toys.
And I have a patient who sleeps on
the floor. And they can stay up and play.
Yes.
No,
I
know. And that's absolutely right. And yes. I mean, I have parents who've said, my kid will just sleep on the floor.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
That's great.
I totally agree. And actually, if you have like a video monitor,
yes.
sometimes that's helpful for parents to feel better about those types of things too, because they can see their kids. Mm-hmm. But no, you did not suggest that. And
okay,
actually,
good.
This is our third podcast that
yes.
Karen and I have done, and we have not released them yet, but we're going to go ahead and do that now, and then maybe we can start, you know, addressing questions if anybody asks us questions.
No, I think
in our patient
definitely.
Populations and, from these, then we can talk about it.
And topics, of course, please send us topics.
Absolutely.
And then at some point we're going to bring on other experts.
I know, which we have not done.
My son is an expert at being 15. And if we can convince Julie's son, who's probably not going to be as into it. My son is an extrovert, and he is all about, he was very impressed that I'd made a podcast.
Well, it's fun, and I love that we're doing it.
I know.
I really enjoy
very
it.
Fun.
It's like the highlight of my weekends.
I know, it's
so
awesome.
Okay, till next time.
Till next time. This is Dr. Karen McLeod.
And Dr. Julie Linderman signing off.
The catchphrase.
Thank you for joining us for another week of the Mommy MD podcast.